And good morning once again, everyone, and welcome back. It's hour number two of the Monday edition of the Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230 online at bowfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. And again, you can also tune in on our video stream. We do have it on our Facebook page and also our X page under Bow Falls Radio. So you can check it out and also make comments and be involved in the show as well. But as we start off hour number two, again, the temperature is 45 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. A bit of a dreary start here to start off the new work week, but very happy to welcome in the new mayor of Wausau, Doug Denny. First of all, Mr. Mayor, thank you for spending a few minutes with us. Less than 2 weeks into your new job, and congratulations on your victory.
Thank you, Chad. Glad to be here, and certainly is another great day to be in Wausau. I took a walk over here from City Hall. A little bit iffy on whether we're going to get wet this morning, but should be clearing up this afternoon.
Well, let's talk about it because it's a very quick turnaround. You have an election. I mean, we're still in the month of April, and on April the 1st, you not had even been elected to the office. You had the election then right away on the first Tuesday of April, and then 2 weeks later, you get sworn in, and now another 2 weeks later, you're into the job. What has the process been like? Number one, I imagine that on election night, it was a huge thrill to be able to earn the trust of the folks here in Wausau. What's the last 4 weeks been like for you?
Well, you know, that 2 weeks leading up to transition, you know, it really flies by pretty quick because you're thinking about what you're doing. You're trying to clean up things from the campaign, sending out thank you notes and letters. It takes an awful lot of time, and that 2 weeks flew by very quickly. It did speak with the mayor of Duluth, and he had a 2 month transition, and he had virtually no transition until he handed the keys off on that 2 months after their elections are in November, and they take office in January. I did have the good fortune to sit down with Mayor Katie on the Friday before, and we had had an hour, good conversation of what her concerns were leaving and what I could maybe expect. And, you know, I talked about a few things like, how do you manage your email? You get 100 emails. Mm-hmm. You get in the morning, there's 100 waiting for you. The calendar tends to drive you by events rather than you driving your calendar. And so settling into a routine probably is going to take some time for me to figure that out just yet. But it's been a whirlwind so far.
As you start your term, and one thing that I think, and I hope that folks realize that, you know, one of the things I think we've seen with previous mayors is that you can have priorities, you can talk about issues, but things always come up over a four-year period. But as you start off your term in office, what are your number one priorities? I guess, you know, you've been writing down things because you're so very busy, obviously, with either events or parts of the job. When you were writing down the things you want to start off with, what are the areas that you're really focused on here early in your term?
Well, first, get an assessment of the shape of the organization, the staff. You know, I had some feeling for that. But I went around and met with all the directors, and that initial meeting is really just a listening session. I want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear what's working, what's not working. And I'll be doing a staff meeting here shortly. We'll have some two-way dialogue there, but really to get a lay of the land. You know, we talked about the schedule. You maybe slow things down a little bit. And I talked about understanding the issues and then prioritize and execute. So what we need to do is put our lists together of what everybody thinks we need to be working on. We're going to definitely talk about some of that the council wants to work on, and we put priorities to them because we can't do everything at one time. So you have a tendency, especially when you come in new, you don't fully have the context, and it's flying at you 1,000 miles an hour, and you get so spread out that you really aren't going to get good at anything. So let's evaluate, prioritize, and then start picking off what we put up on that top of the list, and maybe only three or four things that we work on at one time.
Mm-hmm. When in one of our discussions during the campaign, talked a little bit about leadership style. As you start, when you talk to the folks at City Hall, when you deal with the members of the council, what are you hoping that the folks that work with you see from you early on, maybe in terms of giving an idea of the kind of leadership style you're going to bring to the office?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's about the mission. It's about providing core services in the most effective and efficient manner. So we're going to continue to beat that drum. And how then does each department align to be able to do that? Are there extraneous things that we're doing? And I haven't gone into the detail to see, hey, did the mayor have you doing something different, extra duties? As those things start coming up, I'll take a look at them. Conferences is a good example. There's an awful lot of conference going on at City Hall. Mm-hmm. Are they all necessary? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just struck me as something that maybe I should understand and get a look at. So I want to make sure that everything that staff does goes toward that end of accomplishing the mission, satisfying customer expectations, and that's what the citizens voted for.
One of the things about getting elected is there are a lot of people that are around campaigns, and once you get in, all of a sudden, okay, you are in, and we want you to work on these issues. Are you hearing about specific issues right now that Doug Denny, get to work on this, Doug Denny, get to work on that, and how much do you know? Because I said when you came in, that one advantage may be that you are up to speed on a lot of the different issues that you're going to face as the mayor because of your position the last couple of years on the council. But when you look at it, you talked about some of the issues, and of course I think water is right at the top of it. What issues are you going to be looking at maybe early on? How much discussion are you going to have with the council, maybe with other members of the folks at City Hall on some of these issues? Or are you going to wait maybe to get some of that more information before you start really pushing on some of the things you talked about in the campaign?
Well, we'll wait to get full context, but that won't be long. And I mentioned we're going to be meeting with the council with their retreat, I guess they call it. It's kind of a forming, norming, gelling kind of event.
You're going there? You're going to go there?
I've been invited, sure. it's their deal. It's their retreat. And it's going to be treated as a committee of the whole. So the mayor is a participating member.
Sure.
I won't be chairing it. But I'll be there to and give my two cents, introduce myself. Most of them know me. But we'll talk. Some of their priorities may gel with what I had talked about. Some of them won't, and we'll have to decide. I know one of the things that's high on their list is the homeless issue. I was amazed by the number of people walking in off the street to talk to me about that issue. So it occupies a lot of space in all of our minds, to include the police chief. So we're going to have to find a way to put that on the calendar and move the needle, if you will, and it may not be straight out of the gate with here's my idea how to solve this. It's going to be more information gathering, prioritizing issues. One of the things, we can look out there and see what some cities are doing that's not working.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be able to gather this information, learn what isn't working. On the other hand, I'm hearing things like Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas. They've got things that are working. So maybe we send some people down there rather than going to a conference, go get to meet that city leadership, whether it's me or whether it's the chief. inventory of what we're doing compared to what others are doing, and maybe formulate a few. We have to take it one bite at a
right.
time.
I'm gonna delve a little. You're very good about jumping into a topic I was gonna ask you about. No, absolutely. I'm glad you did. I'm gonna come back to that in a few minutes because we only have a couple minutes left in this segment. But I thought I'd finish off this segment by asking you, why do you think you won the election? Because it was a very interesting election. If you go back to the primary, you finished second in the primary, and then you were able to win in the general election. As you start your job, and obviously part of it is like what resonated with the voters, and obviously those are the kind of things that they're going to expect you to deliver on. Why do you think that you were able to win earlier this month?
Well, you know, I think some of the issues really resonated. I did knock on a lot of doors. We did the basic blocking and tackling on a campaign. I'd never run this level of a campaign before. I was only an alder before this, mm-hmm. and that didn't take much. So we knocked on a lot of doors. We raised a lot of money here locally. My wife sent out 1,500 handwritten, hand addressed letters. Fundraiser letters, and the checks were starting to come in, and every day we'd get something. My wife would say, here's $100 from so-and-so, and here's another $100 for so-and-so, and it just sort of inspired me to keep going. So we had some money to do some advertising. We wrapped my truck, which a lot of people thought was a silly idea, but you know, for a mayor's race, everywhere I went in town, I was riding around. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are just sort of, I mean, that's not a fundamental issue. But it's awareness of who I was, mm-hmm. and when I was knocking on doors, I mean, people were, I would put up signs, they'd stop and see my truck and ask me for a sign. So people were interested in this race, and I talked to a lot of people.
Doug Denny, the mayor of Wausau in office, what's his stay number, what, 13? 14, somewhere?
Tomorrow will be 2 weeks from the swear-in, yes.
But we're happy to have the mayor of Wausau, Doug Denny, joining us. We're going to come back in just over a minute and delve into a couple of issues as we continue here on this Monday. Again, the time is 9:18. Overcast skies starting to brighten a little bit. 45 degrees is the temperature. I'm being optimistic. It's brightening a little
bit. I'm looking over my shoulder here.
But we'll have more with the mayor coming up in just a moment here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. And welcome back. Chad Holmes with you here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Again, we're talking to the newly elected and newly inaugurated mayor of Wausau, Doug Denny. Mr. Mayor, let's talk about, I would say, perhaps the biggest issue of the previous campaign was water. People talked about water, talked about their bills, and in a lot of ways that turned into probably the issue that ultimately may have got you over the hump in a fairly close election. As you now take over as mayor, what are your thoughts? What are we going to see differently? Do you have plans formulated in terms of where we're going with the water issue here in Wausau?
Sure. So this will be one of those issues we talked about earlier that I will be bringing to council. And fortunately, or unfortunately, I think most of the city council who had contested campaigns that I noticed, because they were the ones answering the questions in the newspapers, that eliminating the pilot, the payment in lieu of taxes for the water utility, was an issue for them, yeah. And I think they're going to be eager to bring that up and discuss that early. So how do we minimize that? How do we eliminate it if we can to help reduce upward pressure and maybe offer rate decreases. And I think that's going to be one of them. And I don't know how we don't get that on the agenda as a priority.
Could I ask you to maybe explain for folks and even myself, where, you know, you don't have completely all the details, why is that something that would be positive, the elimination, or, you know, as I think we talked about it again during the campaign as well, even taking steps towards that, what are the big positives in that? And by the way, what, when people who may be against it would say, I don't think that's a good idea, what are the negatives? Because just to be fair in terms of maybe giving both sides of that issue, because you're right, I think that is one that was a major factor and a major discussion point in the run-up to the election, and obviously will have to be talked about again now with the new council and with the new mayor. Could you give a little bit of an educational aspect of why, you know, because you did, I think, bring it up as a council member as well. Give us the pros and the cons of it.
Well, let me start out with the pros.
Because that's why you
know what? I'll tell you, I'm going to give you the cons first, because that's the position we're currently in, is that if we remove it, and it's a hidden tax because it is not itemized on your water bill. One could argue that we could itemize it on the water bill and that will make you feel better, but if we remove it, then it would have to be put somewhere else, is the argument. Mm-hmm. It would have to go on the levy. So then the argument is, well, you're just taking it out of one pocket and putting it in the other pocket. Well, not exactly, because if you think about who are the higher users of water are in the residential community, families. You have families with three or four kids. Typically, you're going to be in the lower. You're younger, you're going to be in the lower income stratosphere or the income brackets, and you're using more water. So you're paying more by paying that additional tax, which could be as high as 18%. The way I look at it is if pools, for example, the Y, charitable organizations, schools, mm-hmm. schools use a lot of water. They water their facilities, that they're feeding kids all day long. So now you're putting that burden on the school district. So it's still transferring that money to the residents. And it's considered a regressive tax. So that would be my big argument is it's a regressive tax. Let's put it where it belongs. So if you have $1 million home on the edge of town and a water sprinkler, you're going to be spending you're going to be spending more on your property taxes than the person renting a house downtown Wausau.
How much do you think that would affect ultimately the bills?
Well, it could be as high as 18%. Now, if we take it all in one fell swoop, but mm-hmm. That's one point. Currently, it could be $2 million. We're currently charging, we're reducing it, I think, to $1.6 million. So that's $1.6 million in real dollars. What it turns out to in an individual's bill depends on how much you're using, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, and is it gonna save you from going bankrupt because of unforeseen circumstances? You know, I don't know. It depends on your circumstances, but any bit of help, especially for those running month to month, check to check, is definitely a bonus. And it's also, look, if you're a renter and you don't think you pay water and it's covered in your rent, your landlord has to make that money up at some point. So if he's getting a whopper of a bill, it's putting pressure on him to raise your rent.
Are there any other areas, again, I think there were disagreements in terms of the process. I don't know if the process, but in terms of the roadmap. Because there have been changes within the state, and they're talking about federally in terms of water. What other areas maybe would we see any changes in terms of water policy within the city at this point, or is it again something that's going to be just discussions in terms of trying to moderate in some ways the raises in terms of what people are seeing on their bills?
Well, one thing we're gonna have to look at in terms of we've got the lead service line replacement plan.
Right.
We'll have to look at how that gets managed. You know, we may be able to adjust our strategy there to be more efficient on our replacements. But that funding is limited. Right now it's a 2/3 grant, 1/3 loan. That loan has not been secured yet by the city, and it has not been determined who pays for it and where it goes. So, you know, we've advertised and actually we've committed to the residents this year that it would be done for free, quote unquote. We haven't determined by council how that's going to happen yet. Generally, it's a special assessment. So I don't think that there's a stomach for that because of what we've committed already. So we're going to need to be very careful how we work through that process. And it's a 5 to 10 year process without a clear funding source, mm-hmm. especially for that loan gap that we're going to have to come up with.
We're going to come back after an information update. We got a news update, weather, and sports all coming up from Civic Media. And then we're going to come back with another segment with Mayor Doug Denny. A couple of topics, issues, economic development, I know is something that is continually looked at within the city. I want to kind of delve a little bit into that. And I want to talk a little bit about a couple of things that we've seen when it's come to police and the homeless community here in Wausau as well. So we'll come back with Doug Denny again, 2 weeks into a 4-year term as the mayor of Wausau, and we'll talk more with the mayor coming up. The time is 9:28. Again, overcast skies and 45 degrees in downtown Wausau. I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230.
What you say, I say.
Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, talking to the new mayor of Wausau, Doug Denny. Let's jump into the idea of a couple of the stories that have come through in the last month. Again, had an election, had a transition in the mayor's race, but also a couple of interesting developments when it comes to police and the unhoused homeless community in Wausau. Number one, going back to late last month, there was discussions over the new officers, and there was quite a bit of discussion back in late March, and there was a lot of pushback against it. But then in early April, the vote was rather overwhelming to add the new officers. And then just in the last week, the vote to put funding up for fencing around the parking lot area of the police department. Beyond the specifics of the issue, something that I kind of wanted to throw out there, just in terms of the feel. And again, I'm somebody that usually says, feel is nothing. It's all about the ultimate legislation. But it does feel as though there is a change in the way that the police department and maybe even the city is looking at the homeless community in terms of, for lack of a better term, criminalizing somebody's status in life. And one thing, I don't mean to put you on the spot because, as you said, and you've had votes that are maybe even a little different than what was ultimately passed, but the idea of equal justice under law is something I've talked a lot about, and talking about people that have economic and political status, you know, in terms of having the economic status that I think does affect folks. And also something, again, I'm kind of rambling here, but also something that the chief had said about having videos of criminals and of criminal activity in that sense. I think everybody would agree that criminal activity needs to be handled, and that people cannot get away with criminal activity. But also, just about the status of people and how that affects how they're looked at by law enforcement. There's a lot there, but has there been a change in maybe the how we look at this issue, or is that something that I'm off base on?
Well, the two that you point out, actually both of them sort of bridged the old administration and a new administration.
Yes.
So I was actually on council when these came through, and I think the first passed while I was still on council, but the fence passed while I was mayor.
Yes.
From committee to council. So this wasn't a break in service between Mayor Rosenberg and myself necessarily, but I have to give some credit to the chief for taking this burden on himself, but it is not his burden completely to carry. And that's where we talked earlier that the council needs a broader understanding of what our strategy is for the unhoused and what our principled philosophy is on how we want to be viewed as leaders in this and as a city around the state. So that's going to have to happen fairly quickly here, so that because some of the alders who objected didn't necessarily object to adding the officers because it may be a part of the pie or the solution, but they objected to it being the lead element, the tip of the spear, and without their informed consent, if that's the right word, and buy-in. So that'll be something that they're going to want to talk about early on. As far as the officers, what I think is interesting is that a lot of those may be filled from within, and those are officers who have served in the community and are in the community. We're not bringing in some outsiders to do some special job here. They're already in the community. So I would agree with anyone out there concerned about enforcement. If enforcement was the silver bullet, we wouldn't be here talking about it, and we wouldn't need to address it. One of the things that I would like to do, in fact, it just dawned on me, because I got this book, I may hand off to my alders from Robert Woodson, Lessons from the Least of These, and it talks about a principled approach to helping people out of difficult situations. And I think we need to be mindful of how every decision we make impacts the least of these, and how we empower them to help themselves.
And in terms of trying to determine the best policy forward, I also think that it needs to be a shared set of facts, because I do think that there's a little disagreement where the chief has said that certain amounts of homeless folks are being dumped into our city, that are being brought to either to an emergency room or just being dropped here. And there's a disagreement by others who work with the homeless community and as well, that I do think that it's vitally important that we have a common set of facts as opposed to maybe opinions. And also talking about the fence that was approved last week. And again, I don't mean to, to be accusatory of anybody, but it almost to me says if the police are scared of these groups, you should be scared as well. Is that a message that is a good one for the community?
Well, let me.
And again, if I'm wrong, you can tell me I'm wrong. But again, I just have this sense where if the police feel like, hey, we need this to be safe, it almost says, well, everybody should have a fence around their property. And I don't think that would be a very good way to look at things.
So, anecdotally, on the homeless, you're right. Facts. We need to develop facts. And one of the promises that the chief has made is that these officers will help build data for us, so we'll know that.
Sure.
Because you're right. Shooting from the hip, and you're sitting there as a council member taking anecdotal commentary from a lot of factors, from those who are advocates to mm-hmm. those who are maybe from the business community down here talking about an incident they saw in their storefront. That is their perspective, but is it the complete picture? We need to understand that. But I've had church groups come in and tell me that they recognize their neighbors by face, by name, neighbors being some of the homeless, mm-hmm. But in recent months have now begun to see people they don't recognize. So there's another anecdotal point. Can we run that to ground? Is it really a fact? As far as the fence goes, I don't believe that's a homeless issue, but I do believe it's a, you know, and I was against this at City Hall. We put in some security, added security at City Hall. Right. It was an expensive piece to keep people from just wandering in upstairs and throughout the building. I tend to lean to the side of trust, if you will. When I was a kid coming home from the YMCA, grew up in Green Bay, we'd walk from the YMCA to my house about 8 blocks away, and it was right, the route took us right through downtown. Wintertime, we would stop at, we knew where all the churches were, we'd take those routes, we'd duck into a church, get warmed up, and at that time I thought, boy, this is kind of cool, that here it's Wednesday night or Thursday night, whatever, and we're walking home and the door's open for us. I don't think you see that today. So things have changed in that regard. The fence, though, for the PD, it's really, and that lot where they're prepping for their daily duty is an extension of the department and the facility there where they're doing their briefings, they're processing paperwork. They're in a protected status, so they're not being interrupted while they're getting prepped for work. They're transitioning from their civilian car to their police car. So I think there's a degree of security that they deserve. Now, does it require that kind of a fence to keep them out? I think that's the solution that they came upon. I was against the amount of spending that we were looking to do for that. A lot of factors come into play there because we could do a chain link fence and it would be very inexpensive, but then it might look sort of industrial.
Right.
So we wanted to keep the beautification level up. So, you know, I understand where the chief is coming from and where the PD has some concerns. And it is not from the homeless that we're fearful of. It's really of that transition that they're in their job as to, you know, keeping them safe. And then they can concentrate on the task at hand and the task ahead, as opposed to, you know, maybe some interruptions.
And finally, economic development. And obviously, I get a front row seat on some of the building here in downtown Wausau. Now, as you take over your position, how do you look at where we are? We had some issues in the past year with the developer. Where do we stand on that? And maybe even beyond that, generally, your thoughts on economic development, because I know that's something that's also going to be very much on your plate.
Well, that was the first question I asked our economic development director when I did that particular briefing. Where are we? Where do we stand? And it was one of the first phone calls that I made. It was the second week. I made a contact with T-Wall and his assistant, and we've.
Did you talk to the man himself?
Yes, I did. So we have some understandings, you know, about expectations, and you know, I think it's going to be very positive news coming out here shortly. We have some expectations. You know, my expectation is that it gets built.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna see some activity coming soon, and we won't. Some of the details will be coming out. And
I'm not gonna break news
for you here, but I, you know, it is positive, and I wanted to make sure that you know, my expectation is that we're also not surprised. You know, here's another thing I've told to all of my staffers, in particular our economic development director. Good news or bad news, the sooner we know about it, the sooner I can help solve or at least be braced for it. And we're not surprised, because the last thing you need is a news media breaking the news that mm-hmm. something's going sideways, and you don't even know yourself. So that's really an expectation that I have of all the staff and of our developer partners. If something happens, they run into, you know, I joke about it several times, but you dig up Jimmy Hoffa's body across the street here. Hey, I want to be you. I want you to call me. If that's going to slow the show, you know that if we need to know these things early.
Interesting indeed. Well, again, I know you have a lot on your plate. Oh, one final thing is, you were talking about, and I said to you, I saw a nice note from Randy Radke yesterday about a proclamation. That aspect of the job, I imagine that's a nice aspect of the job, to be involved in some of these events and giving that official, being an official and being part of a lot of the great events that go on in Wausau.
Oh, sure. You know, this weekend was a event-rich weekend. We had tree planting out at Brockmeyer Park. I planted a plum tree, there are probably 40 some trees that were planted out there. We went to the Asian Pacific Market and did a ribbon cutting, which was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The
perks of the job,
the
right?
Perks of the job and the proclamations. We did the the workers memorial.
Yep.
Now it was rained out, but I was able to link up with Randy, and we handed off the proclamation. So one of the things I'm going to do differently on proclamations, and I want to make sure that somebody, there's a recipient there, or we go out into the community. Last week, the Hmong Heritage Month, that horse man, right. I read the proclamation there instead of at council. So there'll be a few things that we do a little differently, but yeah, I'm enjoying that part of it.
Well, I hope you're enjoying the job. I know it's brand new and you're jumping into the deep end, but really appreciate you coming over, spending a little time with us. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chad. That is
Mayor Doug Denny, brand new mayor of Wausau. We're going to come back, have our daily history lesson coming up next. Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. And welcome back. Chad Holmes with you here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Again, thanks to the mayor of Wausau for joining us, Doug Denny, for being with us here very early, very busy right now in his new job, and really appreciate him spending some time with us here this morning. But today, it is the 29th day of April of 2024. That means it's day number 120 of this year. And 246 days remain in 2024. And some famous events, or maybe not so famous events, have occurred on this date in history. Back on this date in 1913, Gideon Sunbach of Hoboken, New Jersey, received a patent for the zipper. Hard to believe. Before that, there was no zippers. On this date in 1967, after refusing induction into the United States Army the day before, citing religious reasons, Muhammad Ali was stripped of his boxing title. And he would not box until 1970, as he fought in the court his refusing induction into the Army. On this date in 1988, Burt Reynolds and Lonnie Anderson were married in Florida. They divorced in 1993. On this date in 1990, surgeons in Jacksonville, Florida, removed a benign tumor from the abdomen of a 47-year-old woman who went to the emergency room fearing she was having a heart attack. The tumor weighed 65 pounds. On this date in 1990, a wrecking crane began tearing down the Berlin Wall at the historic Brandenburg Gate. The wall had divided East and West Berlin since 1961. On this date in 2004, 20 years ago today, Oldsmobile built its final car, ending 107 years of production. On this date in 2020, a mile-wide asteroid named 1998 OR2 passed within 3.9 million miles of Earth, which was actually a very close call on that asteroid almost hitting Earth. Some famous people are celebrating their birthdays today. Willie Nelson turning 91 years old. Jerry Seinfeld is 70. Kate McGrew from Star Trek Voyager played Captain Catherine Janeway. Also was on Orange is the New Black. Kate McGrew is 69 years old today. Actor Daniel Day-Lewis, so many great roles, but maybe Lincoln is best. He is 67 years old today. The great Michelle Pfeiffer, beautiful actress, talented, fabulous Baker Boys. Also Janet Van Dyne in the Ant-Man movies. Michelle Pfeiffer is 66 years old today. Also 66 is actor Eve Plum, played Jan Brady on The Brady Bunch. Uma Thurman, another fantastic actress.
Oh,
the
yes.
Kill Bill movies, I think, were some of the best she did, but so many other great roles. Uma is 54 years old today. And if you out there celebrating your birthday, happy birthday to you from all of us at Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230.
Happy birthday.
Some famous events to be acknowledged both this week and today. It is Children's Book Week. It is Construction Safety Week. It is Hurricane Preparedness Week. It is Small Business Week. It is PTA Teacher Appreciation Week. It is International Dance Day. I know you'll probably do some dancing at rehearsal tonight.
Oh, definitely.
It is World Wish Day. It is Viral Video Day. It is Go Birding Day. It is Shrimp Scampi Day. And in honor of the invention of the zipper being patented, it is Zipper Day.
Zipper.
All right, so you were, what, 3 out of 5 last week, correct? That's a winning week, by far a winning week.
I did pretty good last week.
That is a great week. But you had a chance for a record on Friday to get 4 out of 5, but didn't quite get there. So you do have a one-game losing streak. You're going to have to try and turn around here today.
Yes.
And again, every day we have our number for the day, and we use it as a quiz for Ian. We give him 3 choices. And if Ian, you know, we say it, he should get 1 out of every 3 because you get 3 choices. So at the very least, you get 33%. But if we have 5 every day, and so you have 20% if you're 1 for 5. You're 40% if you're 2 for 5. Last week, 60%.
Yeah.
Way above 33% if you're 3 for 5. And then 4 for 5 is 80%. But our number for the day is the number of children under the age of 18 treated in emergency departments annually for lawnmower-related injuries in the United States.
Oh, my.
So these are children under 18 treated in emergency departments annually for lawnmower-related injuries.
Okay.
Is it 849? Is it 8,490? Is it 84,900? So A, 849, B, 8,490, C, 84,900.
All right. I'm just going to take a guess at this. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to go with A. I'm going to go with 849. That's my final answer.
The correct answer of the children under 18 treated in emergency departments annually for lawnmower-related injuries in the United States is 8,490.
Really? That much?
Yeah. Well, we're a big country. Yeah. And a lot of kids do mowing the lawn. Some of them have part-time jobs. So I would think, that makes a lot of sense. And I thought 84,000 way too much. But 8,490.
Yeah, 84,000. I was not going
all
for that
right.
One.
Well, you're 0 for 1, but there's still plenty of time to turn things around to still get above, you know, again, minimum is got to get 2. Because that puts you above 33%.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to try to get even more than that. But again, you've been on a pretty good roll lately. So we're going to try to
getting better.
Try to get back on the winning track tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Thanks again to Mayor Doug Denny for joining us here on the program. And tomorrow we'll be joined by Chad Daly from the Marathon County Public Library. Get the latest on what's going on at the library and a whole bunch more. Have a great day, Ian.
You too, Chad. Happy Monday, everybody.
And stick around. Coming up, it's Matt and Air on Air. That's next after an information update on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230.